Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
Many years, the Kansas Jayhawks are the biggest story heading into the NCAA tournament because they're the favorite to win. From presidents picking the Jayhawks, analysts across the country, and of course, everyone in your company bracket pool picking the Jayhawks, KU is on everyone's mind in March. This year, they're at the top of everyone's mind for a different reason: COVID protocols. The Jayhawks come in as a bit of a wild card, as Lawrence Journal World Sports editor Matt Tate will tell us, because Jalen Wilson did not make the trip to Indianapolis. We'll get Matt's thoughts on what this all looks like before Saturday's opener against Eastern Washington. We'll also find out what he thinks of the AD and the football coaching searches going on, and you're going to get to know him. Matt Tate has been with his company for over 20 years, starting at the Bonner Springs Chieftain. It's been an incredible journey, and he still finds time along the way to jam with his dad's band. Matt comes from a musical family and loves to play guitar. Who knows? You may have actually seen him around town sometime within the last few years. Our conversation at KKHI is with sports editor Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World. It's brought to you by Green Compass CBD, online at cbd-gc.com. Stacey Higgins is a personal friend of mine, has been for 20 years, and she tells me these are the best products you can get, much better than you can drive to the strip mall or whatever and buy. These are USDA organic, no or nominal traces of THC. This company grows their own. They've only been in business for 2 years. They have their own farms in North Carolina. There is no middleman. Perfect for pain and inflammation, topical pain creams, roll-ons. Keep it in your golf bag, in your glove compartment. They also have all kinds of great products for calming and focus. It's cbd-gc.com. That's cbd-gc.com. Or call Stacy if you're interested in doing what she's doing. You can get on the ground floor with this company, which doubled its sales in year two last year to $22 million in sales. This is a ground floor opportunity. This will be a $20 billion industry by 2024. Make a little side hustle, money on the side, or a work at home, full-time career with Green Compass CBD. Call Stacy Higgins for more information on how to make some money. 913-961-3881. That's 961-3881 for Stacy. Her site is cbd-gc.com. Bstock.net, Chris and the gang out of Bstock simply sell electronics for less than you can get them anywhere else. This is not you're going to save 20 bucks on a TV. This is 30% off, in many cases, hundreds of dollars that you save buying a Dell computer, an HP, Lenovo, Apple products, Samsung TVs, LG, and Vizio. Online for anyone that listens to this podcast, anywhere you live, at bstock.net. That's B as in boy, bstock.net. Or if you live in the Kansas City area, visit the outlet store, 14680 South Flaming Road in Olathe. If you need a phone number or directions, go to the website. It's right there at bstock.net. Ron Buck and his team at Buck Roofing are Kansas City's top residential and commercial roofers. They do big buildings on the plaza, the Midland Theater, and my mom's house. They do it all. It's Buck Roofing. No job too big or too small is absolutely true in the case of Buck Roofing, now known and respected as Kansas City's finest roofer. It's not close. There's a supervisor on the job every day. Ron takes absolute personal pride in every single job they take on, from a small repair to an entirely new roof for a business on the plaza. Online at rbuckroofing.com or 384-2680, and you'll sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head. Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World is our conversation on KKHI.
The KK Has Issues conversation is presented by Joslyn's Jewelry, 95th and Antioch, or online at joslynsjewelry.com.
Our conversations with Matt Tate of KUSports.com and the sports editor of the Lawrence Journal World. It's great to have him here. He's broken the story, essentially, of Jalen Wilson not making the trip with the Jayhawks to Indianapolis for the NCAA tournament. We will start there as we say hello to an old friend from back in the radio days, Matt Tate. Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm doing fabulous. Good to hear your voice. Happy to be talking March Madness, that's for sure.
It is. What do you make of Jalen Wilson not making the trip? That basically eliminates him this week, correct? But probably not next week if they get to the Sweet 16?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's what they're planning on anyway. You know, part of this deal is brand new for everyone, right? So you just, you know, you can do the math and that lines up that way. But you never know. I mean, you never know if it's delayed or if it's expedited or whatever. So I think that's what the safest assumption and what they're planning for and expecting is, you know, if they can win round one, they won't have him round two. And then if they can get by that one, they may get him back. And, you know, I think that's it's a tall order for sure. And they need him. But at the same time, if they find a way to win two games without him and then they get him back, you're talking about a major lift. I mean, you're talking about a lift in terms of, you know, on the court, but certainly just the mental side of that, getting your guy back, getting a player back who's played 30 plus minutes most games, nine double doubles, you know, a guy that's been a big part of what you've done down the stretch. So I think that, you know, they've got work to do, and it's never easy in March, obviously, but if they can find a way, I think they could really go into the Sweet 16 feeling good and with some juice and maybe even with a little bit of house money kind of, you know, mentality, because at that point, there's people picking them to lose first round, second round already. So if they get to that point and then they get their guy back, that's a lift.
Yeah, there would be no doubt about that for sure. And, you know, I think this team has come so far defensively that they're a threat to anybody that they're playing right now, maybe short of Gonzaga. Gonzaga would score on them for sure. They'd have to find a way to score a whole bunch of points. But, hey, get to that point and figure that out somewhere down the road. Where do they stand with McCormick right now? Is he's with the team, may play a little. I know Bill Self said after the selection was made on Sunday, he wasn't sure exactly what the plan would be to incorporate him and get him back in there. What's the latest on McCormick and Inarundu, where they're going to be on this thing?
Yeah, I think the hope is that they'll have him midweek. You know, they didn't travel up Monday either. And the idea was, you know, get him midweek, get him up there at some point, even if that's Thursday. You could still get in a Thursday afternoon and a Friday practice with those guys. And, you know, rather than worrying too much about it until that point, I think that's when the coaching staff would take an open look at it and say, okay, well, here's what he can do. Here's how his wind is. Here's how their legs are. Because, you know, whether they were contact tracing or positive tests or whatever the situation was, it's been a long time since they played and a long time since they played a game. I mean, their last game was March 4th, you know, so you're looking at 2 weeks away from the team and not practicing or playing. So I think at that point, though, you know, if that's realistic, if that timeline works as they sort of hoped it would, then, yeah, you get two practices in and then you know. And then you can spend Friday night, Saturday morning a little bit kind of fine-tuning and adjusting your game plan. You know, the idea, I think, you have to go into it expecting that they're going to be back full bore. I think that's how you have to treat it. And then if they aren't, or they get more winded during the game action than you expected or that they thought they would, then, you know, you sub and you make adjustments then. But I think trying to prepare for it, you know, prepare them to be half ready or prepare to bring them back slowly. I mean, I think that's a little bit of borrowing trouble. I think you just need to, if they're back and they're practicing and they have a jersey on and they're running up and down and they're sweating, then you've got them and you play them like you would. And like I said, then you can adjust on game day if you need to. But I think that fits, man. I mean, I think it fits within their schedule. I think it fits to give them a fair chance to be pretty ready for Saturday. I think that if you look at how they played against Oklahoma, it's different because David McCormick was the guy out in that game and Jalen Wilson will be out on Saturday. But it's the same idea. You know, you're down a starter. You're down a guy who's contributed a lot to your team. So how do you overcome that? And they've proven to themselves they can because they were unbelievable in that first half against Oklahoma. And then they didn't play very well in the second half, but they did close. And then so they're coming in with a pretty good taste in their mouths. And Oklahoma's a pretty good team, too, as you know. So I think that, you know, for as bad as this thing could have gone, for as scary as it got there for a minute, for as real as the idea that was going through these kids' heads of, holy crap, are we really about to lose out on March 2 years in a row? I mean, that had to be heart racing, heart stopping type of stuff. And so for them to make their way through that and actually go up to Indy and get a chance to play in the tournament. And, you know, that's why these kids come here, right? That's the big deal. So for that to be on their table and their reality right now, I just think they're going to be a loose team. I think they're going to be so thankful and energized by the fact that they're actually playing that, it really should give them some freedom and the ability to play loose and with a free mind. And as you mentioned, I mean, Gonzaga's in their bracket, so there's no pressure. You know, no one's going to pick you to go to the Final Four. So just go play, have fun, and see what happens. And I really think they're kind of wired to do that.
Is there any way to know, do you think they'll make it through this week clean with these COVID tests? I know Bill Self talked Sunday evening about just living on the edge with every test and everything they're doing and not knowing exactly what all the protocols are at Indianapolis and all that. But it seems to me if Jalen Wilson was the one that tested positive on Friday, that these tests going forward here on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week are very, very important, because if you can get to Thursday without any, you're probably clear at that point, aren't you?
I would think, yeah, and there's no way to know. I mean, there's no way to, you know, anybody can get on here and say, hey, I think they're going to make it, or they're in trouble, or, you know, there's just no way to know. I mean, Self said even before the Big 12 tournament that he thought that the bubble in Indianapolis would be safer than not being in the bubble, you know, and that makes perfect sense. So you'd like to think, you know, they're going to do all the right things. You know, you know that the strict rules are in place, and you know that, I mean, if you've covered KU or been around KU at all, you know that that's how it is anyway. Self doesn't let these guys run around during the tournament. They're there. They're off their feet. You know, they get to play video games and hang out on social media or watch movies or whatever with their guys in their rooms and stuff like that. But even that will be limited this time because, you know, we're not sharing rooms. We're not congregating big time, you know. So he's used to keeping these guys under a pretty tight watch during the tournament because it's business for them. And, they always approach it that way. So I think that'll feel normal to these guys. I think being in that bubble environment certainly gives them a chance to get through to where they want to be, and that's playing. And you know, then you win or lose, but that's the same every year. So I like their chances to get through it. And you know, I think getting through once Jalen that positive test or whatever, and you know, obviously Jalen didn't make the trip, so there's your connection. But once that happened Friday, I think you get through Saturday, you get through Sunday. Those were probably the scariest days. Now, you're right. Self said, you're living and dying with every test result right now. So there's no doubt that changes at all. But I think that those scariest days, at least from my perspective and how I view it, I think those had to be the two scariest days because you had McCormick and Inaruna that were held out of the Big 12 tournament for COVID protocols. And you thought you made it through that because you played a game against Oklahoma. So you breathe, right? You take that sigh of relief and you go, okay, we're good. We're playing. Those guys will be back with us next week. We're fine. Here we go. And then Friday morning, this one pops up, a positive test. And all of a sudden, now you're starting to worry about, you know, those things kind of on top of each other. And then, oh God, is this the start of it? You know, is more coming? And so I think the fact that they got to Indy is huge. That obviously meant Saturday, Sunday, Monday went well. And so, you know, maybe some of the hardest work's done already and they can move forward just taking care of business up there and being really, really careful and really, really smart. And they will be. I mean, these guys, they've done it all year. You know, it caught up with them here late, but it hit every team in the Big 12. It hit most teams around the country at one point or another. So these guys wanted to play. They were willing to do that, to sacrifice going out, living normal college life and all that stuff, because they wanted to play their season. And so there's no way, at least I wouldn't think, there's no way they're going to slip up now or let that go now, because this is what they played for. So yeah, there's no way of knowing for any team. And, you know, I saw early Tuesday, Georgia Tech had a player that was ruled out and would not be available for I don't know if it was the rest of the tournament or not, but certainly their first game or two. And, you know, so just a reminder that it's very much still out there and affecting things, and just do the best you can and hope you catch a break.
All right. I'm curious about your thoughts, because I've talked to a lot of people in sports that have found this to be annoying, and that's from the Royals to college teams to local high school coaches and whatnot. And the reason I bring this up is I'm trying to remember if I ever heard anybody in one of these news conferences or Zoom calls, when they found out a player tested positive, I'm trying to remember the reporter that asked, is he okay? Is the player okay? Are they going to be all right? Are they in the hospital? Is everything okay? Are you concerned for them? I don't remember those questions. It's become such a run-of-the-mill thing now when young athletes test positive. Nobody even thinks, are they sick? Are they going to be okay? Or whatever, because nobody's been to the hospital on any of these things. So I'll ask you, you've been doing this for a year, Matt. And well, no, you've been doing this for a long, long time. You've been doing this under COVID for a year. Did sports do too much? Did they overreact in all of this?
Gosh, I don't really even know how to answer that. Man, I'm not trying to dodge the question by any means. I, I, I think I really genuinely believe that that's a different answer for every single individual out there, you know, and what I think may be different from what my dad thinks, and what my dad thinks may be different from what, you know, his buddy thinks, and so on down the line. I, you know, it certainly looks like, here's how I'll answer it. My belief is I thought from the very beginning, Kevin, and I'm talking about going back to, you know, once we got through March and April and kind of better maybe what was happening here, because I think that's the deal last year. They had to shut that tournament down because no one knew what this was, right? No one knew if this was airborne or what the deal was. And there was a lot of fear surrounding that and understandably so. But once we made it through the first couple of months and, you know, people started feeling safe going and getting their mail again and, you know, picking up groceries and not having to spray them down with, you know, pesticide in the garage before they brought them in and that kind of stuff, which, you know, I may or may not have been guilty of some of that, but, but, you know, once we made it through that and we realized, you know, okay, they're going to try to play some college football. They're going to try to get this thing going with baseball in the summer and et cetera, you know, I think that at that point, and this is how I felt from the beginning. I think it was okay to have no fans. I mean, I wrote a column last July that said, "Hey, you should just give up the idea of fans right now and just focus on playing the game. Get the kids out there. Don't worry about introducing outside elements. Don't worry about controlling the stands. Don't worry about any of that. And just let the kids play." And you know, and ultimately that's, you know, I know there's money to be made from the fans too, but when you're talking about college athletics, really all sports, but not high school, you know, you're talking about the money is coming from the television dollars, right?
I know, so, but I, you know, I look back to the Royals season and, you know, it was a shortened season. They lost all those players right at the beginning and none of them were sick. And I talked to people in the organization. They're like, "This is the most frustrating thing ever. We have $45 million worth of players sitting over here that can't play for 14 days because they tested positive and have no symptoms, none." And it was just driving them crazy. It's like, there's no fans in the stands. There's nobody to give it to. And so I've heard a lot of that in sports. And I think now the reason I bring it up now is the numbers are incredibly low. In 5 weeks, Dana White's going to have a UFC fight, three title bouts in Jacksonville, Florida. They've sold the arena out, 16,000 people. There's no stipulations, no regulations, nothing. It's just going to be regular sports in 5 weeks. So here we sit with basketball's biggest moment. They just sent six officials home, and we're sitting here on pins and needles with Kansas. We don't know what's going to happen. I'm just wondering if this is too much at this point. I'm not talking about a year ago when they shut it down. And I agree with you. No fans for a while was a great thing. It just feels like it's time to not worry so much if one of these players tests positive.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. And that makes sense. And I think a lot of people have felt that way, right? Especially with the younger generation. I mean, and frankly, I mean, that was the whole Big Ten thing, right? Those kids, when they canceled the Big Ten season, those kids were like, "No, I don't care. I want to play. I'll be fine. Let me play football." Right. And so I do get that. I mean, I do get that side of it. And I didn't think they were crazy. You know, maybe their parents ran a little crazy, but that's what parents do. so, you know, I understand that too, but I think that a year in, I think that's a good way to phrase that and to kind of preface things. I mean, I think a year in, we probably do have a good enough understanding that, look, if Jalen Wilson, or David McCormick or Tristan Inarona, if they tested positive, but they want to play, you probably could let them play. But, you know, then liability issues come into the picture.
They do.
And maybe that's a whole other thing that I don't understand. And you know, athletic departments and coaches and, you know, the people have to cover their backs. There's no question about that.
I'll bet you there isn't a team in the country a year ago before coronavirus, so 2 years ago. I bet there's not a basketball team in America that didn't play a player with a virus of some sort. Cause they, you know, they get some symptoms. They go, "Oh yeah, sure. You got a sinus infection or a little bit of the flu, or you've got this, you've got that, but you're a good player. So get out there and play." And the player wants to play and they play. I mean, I've followed sports my whole life. Sick players play. They play all the time, Matt. And I'm not dismissing coronavirus is worse. I get it. And people have died and it's horrible. But 20 somethings aren't dying and athletes aren't going to the hospital or the ICU. They just aren't. So if the fans aren't there and, you know, there's no risk of spreading that and it's basically the other players or whatever, I think at this point, I'm ready to get back to normal. I'm just ready to go at this point. I want to see Jalen Wilson play in the tournament. I don't want to not see him this weekend. I don't know anybody that wants to not see him this weekend.
Well, that's the scary thing. And I'm not talking about Jalen or Kansas here. I'm talking about, let's say we get to the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight and something happens. And Gonzaga's sitting there at 29-0, 30-0, and boom, test. And all of a sudden, what do? Do you delay it because they're Gonzaga and because they got a shot at history? Or do you follow protocols and contingency plans that you set up to say, they just got to go. They forfeit. They lose. They're out. They're not playing in the Elite Eight, or they don't make the Final Four. Kansas, you're in. Iowa, you're in. USC, you're in. Whoever it is, you know. I mean, that's like, I just hope and pray that we don't have to see that. And I don't know how realistic that is. I feel like it may be inevitable. Maybe not with Gonzaga, and maybe not at that stage in the tournament. But I do feel like it's a little naive to think that won't happen. So it may be inevitable. And I just, like I said, I just really hope it doesn't happen, because forget the asterisk, Doc. I don't care about that. I mean, you see Kansas fans saying that Texas doesn't deserve the Big 12 title, tag because they didn't have to beat Kansas in that game. But, you know, whatever. That, I don't like that stuff. I mean, if you're the last team standing, you win, man. And
no doubt.
You get the trophy and you get it all. I love that. So, I think that's how that went. But yeah, I just hope we don't have to deal with that, because this already, one way or the other, even if the tournament runs clean, people are going to want to put an asterisk on this season, because it was a COVID year and things got crazy. And, you know, Baylor may be undefeated still too, is what people would say, right? But they aren't, because they had to take 3 weeks off, and here we go, you know. So I just that's my biggest hope right now, is that doesn't happen. And yeah, could these kids play? They probably could, you know, any of them that test, they probably could. But again, I think the liability thing is probably the biggest factor here, and right or wrong, whether you agree with it or like it, I mean, it's a real thing. And I understand why that's got to be part of the equation.
So, well, I don't feel bad for Baylor after watching them at T-Mobile Center. They better worry about North Carolina and Wisconsin right now and getting into the Sweet 16. Baylor's one of the weirdest one seeds I've ever seen, and part of that is COVID, because they were playing great at a high level earlier this year. But I think it'll be a fascinating, fun tournament. There's no asterisk for me. Whoever wins it, wins it. And, you know, I'm all on board with that. I think we just kind of know what it is. I want to ask you about you, because I feel like through the years when I had you on radio, it was always so timely and live. And now I've got a little time to talk to you about some other stuff. You've been with your company, the Lawrence Journal World, for 20 years now. I did not know this. I read this on your bio on the website, that your first assignment with the company was the Bonner Springs Chieftain and the Baser Sentinel. What did you work out of Lawrence and cover those teams? Did you live in Kansas City or Bonner? Tell me what it was like when you were covering news and sports and everything for the Bonner Springs Chieftain and the Baser Sentinel.
I loved every second of it, and I hold both of those papers, which are now no longer in existence, sadly. I hold them so near and dear to my heart, because they helped me learn how to do this. And I was a one-man show. I was the sports editor. I wrote the stories. I laid out the sports pages. I took the photos. Back in those days, because I am old enough to have some gray in my beard and whatnot, I had to develop some of the film. It was film. Mm. When we made the move to digital, it was a major day, for me. We actually hired a real photographer at one point. So, it was a great time. I mean, I graduated from KU in 2000, and at the time, I was, you know, for the last like maybe year and a half, 2 years of school, I lived with Sam Mellinger. We were roommates. We grew up together, and we were running the KU rival site throughout the last 2 years of school. And so Sam, you know, he went in, and this was long before it was, any kind of pay site or any kind of money to be made. Otherwise I probably would have never left. We weren't making anything. I think we got a check for $47 one month, and we split it and we went and bought dinner or something, you know. It was incredible. but it was so new. Everything was so new there. I mean, even, you know, not everybody had internet in their house even, and still people dealing with dial up and all that stuff. So, Sam got a job with the Star, obviously, and pretty much right out of school, and it was covering high schools. And so I rode it out for a little while longer and just tried to, you know, get my bearings and figure out where I was going to go, what I was going to do. I knew it was going to be sports writing, but just where, you know. And kept in touch with the guys at the Journal World always was interested, and they didn't have anything, but at some point the job at the weeklies, or one of the jobs at the weeklies, came open, and those were weekly papers. So they got me involved, and I think they knew me a little bit because I covered KU at Kansas and all that stuff. But at that point, I think they were happy I was a warm body willing to do the job. So it wasn't like a real intense interview process where I was the best candidate. I might've been the only one, but I'm okay with that because it gave me an unbelievable opportunity to go fine tune all of those skills and all of my craft and, you know, understand all sides of the business, the layout, you know, managing a budget, story budget, things like that. I mean, it was really awesome. So, very, you know, very interesting path. I was over there for 6 years. We actually started another paper while I was there, another weekly in Shawnee called the Shawnee Dispatch that covered Mill Valley back before Mill Valley was a 6A powerhouse. And, you know, some of the Shawnee Mission schools, Shawnee Mission Northwest, Maranatha, Shawnee Mission North a little bit, that kind of stuff. So, you know, that was fun too. I mean, talk about a really cool experience, starting a newspaper from the ground up and getting all those experiences. So yeah, everything I learned there was just tremendous. You know, I mean, I just learned so much about the business and also just, you know, myself too, and how to grind and how to work hard. And I love those communities. I love the kids. I love their schools. I met a bunch of wonderful coaches and parents and people. And, you know, that's why I got into this business, Kevin. I love sports, but I love relationships even more. And so to understand how to build those relationships with these people, you know, that nobody's ever heard of, right? They're just kids at Bonner Springs, 4A high school in the middle of Kansas. You know, no, not in the middle, but you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. No big deal, not national names, nothing like that. And so, you know, to get to know them and their parents and you know, have them trust me and tell me their stories and share interesting things with me. I mean, I honestly tried to carry that over to the Journal World when I made the move over, you know, when I was covering Lawrence High and Free State, and then when I was covering KU football, and then even now today to covering Kansas basketball. I mean, I still think it's the same job, you know, obviously the stakes change and the publicity and the views you get change, but it's still the same job for me. And so I try to take those same lessons I learned back then into what I do today. And I'm very lucky and very fortunate to have had the path. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Tom Keegan in this little rant that I'm going on, because he did it all for me. I mean, as soon as he took over at the Journal World as the sports editor, I got in touch with him on day one, sent him an email, and you know Tom.
Yeah.
So you can imagine this next part is right up his alley. Every year that I worked with him after that, and we probably worked together 10, 11 years before he left, every year, at least once or twice a year, he would bring that email out. He had it printed out. He'd bring it out, and he'd read it to me, and I was kissing ass and really sucking up to him in that email to let him know I'd really like to work there someday and welcome to town. And gosh, if there's anything you need, Mr. Keegan, just let me know and all this, you know. And he would love to get it out and read it to me and just, you know, throw it in my face and give me a hard time. But you know what? We connected right away. I don't know if it was just good fortune or if he asked around about me or maybe a little bit of both, but he saw something he liked. You know, we had such a great relationship and still do, but I mean, when we were working together, it was the best time ever. I mean, we attacked things the same way. I learned so much from him. I mean, whether that was sitting down and him actually teaching me or just watching him and following along, you know, I just learned so much, and I'm so thankful for his role in my career and everything that he did for me, because, you know, it got me to the Journal World and that was a huge jump for me. And it's obviously led me to where I am today, but more than that, it just rounded me into a much, much better sports journalist. And I'm so thankful for that.
That's
so
really cool.
It's been a fun ride for sure.
Yeah. Nice you to mention Tom. He's the best. We talked many times about your love of travel and the beach and tropical locations, things like that. I did not know you play guitar. Matt, I did not know
this.
So do you ever play guitar at the beach? And if not, what do you play on your guitar? What do you like to play?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. I don't know that I've ever had a guitar on the beach, because usually I pack as light as I can for those trips. But I would love to. There's been plenty of times where I've wanted to have one. I probably have, you know, I'm an amateur musician for sure. My father, I grew up, you know, my dad was a musician my whole life. That's how he made his living. He was in a band. He was in a rock and roll band and back in Colorado. And that was, like I said, he made his living, and he was regionally famous throughout the Rocky Mountain area and ski towns throughout Colorado. And it was a cool upbringing. It was really fun to experience. And so that's where my love of music came from. You know, he was a keyboard player and a lead singer and a front man and a wild and crazy dude, you know. But guitar was something I was always interested in. And so some of the guys he played with and my stepsister, in fact, actually taught me one year. And I just picked it up and had a good ear. You know, I think I get that. There's some genetics involved in that. I think I picked that up from my father. And so kind of learned along the way. And so I picked up some recording equipment for my own home studio. And I've probably written 20, 25 songs, and there's probably about six of them that I'd tell you about. The rest are pretty lame and usually about some girl from the past. But, but you know, there's some I'm pretty proud of. And one of the things that, you know, my dad, who lifelong musician, you know, studied it, learned it, knows it inside and out, he'll listen to some of these songs that I write, and he'll say, what? He'll get frustrated. Like, what? But it's because I'm putting a couple of things together that he would never do, because in terms of, you know, what the rules are in music, you wouldn't do that chord progression or something like that. And so he would never think of it. And he ends, you know, after he'd get frustrated, he'd end up saying, well, damn it, that's kind of cool, actually, you know. So I'm kind of pissed off at you for not having to be constrained by, you know. Yeah, it's really cool. So, you know, I've also, it's a passion of mine for
sure. Have you played with him? Have you played together?
We have. I for a long time, gosh, going back to, you know, maybe even like late high school days, I'm a big Doors fan, big Beatles fan, but the Doors are right there too. And so one night they were playing a gig in Keystone, Colorado, and it was as dead as could be. I mean, they used to play like, you know, Friday, Saturday would be their big nights, but they'd go up to these ski towns, summer, winter, whatever. And they'd play, you know, sometimes they'd play Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday and make good money and you know, be there. But a lot of times those Wednesday nights were just brutal. You know, no one was out, dead. Mm-hmm. And I swear there were no more than two people in this entire bar one night. And, you know, all the bar owners knew my dad for years and years and years. And they knew me then, right? So they'd let me in and they knew I was no trouble. I didn't drink. I wasn't a punk. You know, I just wanted to hear my dad play. And so they stick me in a corner, and the bartenders would always keep my Coca-Cola refilled, and you know, they just leave me out of the way, and I just get to do my thing. And but one night in Keystone, it was dead, and my dad was bored, and it's no fun for them either, because they need a crowd. You know, you it's hard to play to an empty room. Mm-hmm. So he was looking for anything to entertain him, and he looked down at me and he said, "You want to come up and sing?" And I said, "Sure." So they did a couple of Doors songs, and you know, they did a mix of originals and cover songs, and so they did Doors songs. And so he's like, "Well, let's do a couple Doors songs. You can sing them." And so from then on.
How old are you then?
I was probably 16, 17 years old.
Nice.
And I did it. I've done it recently. In fact, I mean, I've done it throughout my life. One of the coolest ones was, I would say my dad lives here now, in the area. He's lived in Oskaloosa and Lawrence and Topeka over the last decade or so. So he's around and in town, and he got a gig downtown in Lawrence at a bar called Lucia that's pretty brand new. It used to be Fatso's downtown, but it's called Lucia now. And he got a gig in there with some guys he used to play with in high school in Kansas City. He went to Shawnee Mission South and grew up there. So they came over and had this fun reunion gig. And so I got up there one night with him. This is maybe 5-6 years ago now, but so I'm on Mass Street singing the Doors song with my father on live on stage. I mean, that was, you know, we've had some great times and great memories, and you know, that was one of the best, because this is the town I grew up in, you know. Right. this is my town, and so here I am doing something I would have never thought I'd be doing in town, and had a blast. It was really fun, and it's always been fun. I mean,
no rehearsal.
I've never branched out.
No rehearsal. You just jumped up and played.
Yeah. Well, here's the best one. Here's the best story. So there's they were doing the same kind of band. They were doing like a retirement party in Kansas City. So I don't even remember. It was at some, like, you know, ballroom or something. It wasn't a bar, but I don't know how many people there, quite a few people, but you know, whatever. I was going to go. I was going to go check it out. And usually he drags me up there to sing, but I always just love being around my dad and music. So I was going to go anyway, you know, and this was also 5-6 years ago. And so the night before their gig, he sent me a text. I don't even think he called. I think he sent me a text and he said, "Our bass player doesn't like playing reggae. So you're going to play bass tomorrow on our Bob Marley song." And I've never held a bass to this point in my life. So I can play guitar okay. I don't play lead solos or anything real well. I'm just a rhythm guitar player. But again, good ear. I follow along well. It's kind of natural for me. And I'm very thankful for that because I get it from him, you know. So, but this was a whole different thing. And so I, you know, he texts me this and I call him. I said, "What are you talking about?" You know, like, he goes, "You'll be fine. Suck it up." And I'm like, but I've never held a bass, you know, like, this doesn't make any sense. So he's, you know, he's adamant though. He's like, "You're doing it. Shut up, you know, cause we got to have a bass player. We can't not play these songs or whatever." So we go and, you know, I immediately get my guitar out. I didn't even have a bass. So I start trying to, you know, pick through these songs. And finally, like later that night, we got together or something and I showed him. I was like, "Well, here's what I'm working on." And he's like, "Oh, well, you're going to be fine." He's like, "You're making it way too complicated. You don't even have to play a whole bass line like you're doing. You just need to play the key that we're in. And just when the change comes, just pluck a note and hold it down." And so I did. And you know, I'll never forget it. It was amazing. Somebody got video of it. And it's really dark and kind of grainy and you don't really see much. You can see me, you can see my dad, you can hear him singing, you know, of one of the songs anyway. And I mean, it was a blast. Like, you know, I had no problem. Like I said, this wasn't that long ago. So I was long grown into my confidence and feeling good about who I am as a human being and all that stuff. But you want to talk about a confidence builder. It was, I kind of, for a moment there, felt like I'm a freaking rock star, man. I just pulled that off on one night's notice, you know, and it's not anything anybody would have noticed at all. Like, which is kind of like a good umpire, right? You don't want to be part of the show. If you're a good bass player, nobody notices you. If you're a bad bass player, you stand out. So I made it through it. You know what? I'm so busy these days and our staff's so much smaller than it ever was. And we're still trying to crank out the same amount of material, if not more, in terms of my job and covering KU and sports and Lawrence. And, you know, I just don't find as much time to play music and, you know, do as much of that as I'd like. But anytime I go down there and play, sometimes my wife's got a beautiful voice and sometimes we'll be bored and I'll just bring the guitar out and we'll just sit there and, you know, I don't know a ton of songs, but I can hear them in my head I can follow along with chords and just, you know, next thing you know, we're sitting there for 6 hours, my fingers are bleeding and she's singing and I'm playing. It's awesome. It's wonderful. Yeah.
No idea how jealous everyone listening is right now. I've said 1,000 times, I'd love to be able to play the piano or guitar around the holidays when the family's around, even if just for like 15 minutes, a few little songs,
right?
Let some people sing in the family that can't really sing, just play the music for them. It would just be spectacular. Good for you, man. That is just amazing. Well, I know you're busy. Tournament week and you got to go. Just a 30 seconds or a minute on this. And I'll revisit this with you maybe in a month or two or sometime this summer after it's all shored up and we know what's going to happen with the football coach and the AD and all that stuff. But it was just a really ugly week last week, and not to end on a negative note or anything, but how's it going? What do we know about where they are and looking for the replacements and how this is all going to play out?
Well, you know, there's obviously a progression that's going to have to happen. They're going to have to find their AD before their football coach. So that has kept me above water because, Kevin, this is crazy. I mean, like, that last week was by far the craziest, wildest week of my professional life. And I say that having lived through conference realignment, when I did that 18 hours a day, you know, Keegan and I were trying to do that as well as we could and stay on top of that. We drove over to freaking Kansas City's corporate airport one night because we thought we got a tip that Larry Scott was coming in from the Pac-12 to woo KU and have them join the Pac-12. And so, you know, one of those Keegan memories that I have, he's Blair and Santana down the road driving 90 miles an hour and we're racing over there. I mean, just, you know, those were, that was our life. That was our time together. It was awesome. So that, you know, that conference realignment stuff was no joke, and I was scared to mow my lawn back then. But this last week's been equally crazy, if not crazier, just because it's March. I mean, AD search and coaching search is old hat for me now. I've done a lot of those here, as you know. But boy, at the same time, tough. And then you throw them on top of March Madness. That's a lot. And then the COVID thing too. So. So there's the obvious progression. I think that they're going to have to find their AD before they can even think about a football coach. So that helps kind of slow it down a little bit. But I do hear that it's moving pretty fast, and I do hear that, you know, they want to find their AD soon. And I think they've got a really good opportunity here to find somebody that is exactly what they need. Jeff Long on paper looked like a pretty good hire when they made it. But I heard things day one that made me wonder if he was.
Yep.
And so be it. I mean, sometimes that happens. I mean, that happened with them and David Beatty. You know, Clint Bowen was the guy they should have hired then. And Beatty came in and did a better interview and sold himself. Yeah. And good for them. Good for him. You know, it happened.
Is the chancellor in any trouble here?
I don't know that. I haven't heard that.
It's not gone well. And the NCAA basketball thing is coming too. I mean, at some point you got to look all the way to the top and say, do we need to restructure this whole thing? Don't you?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a very, very likely reason that they did end up running, Jeff off. Basically.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that if Chancellor Girard had let that thing linger even another couple of weeks, he could have found himself swept up in a pretty nasty trifecta really quickly.
I agree.
And so, he did a similar thing when they got rid of Zanger. I mean, I Zanger. I mean, I think it's very likely that Zanger, had he known his time was up, would have happily come to some sort of mutual parting of ways or resigned to go work on academics somewhere. He wanted what was best for KU, and he would have done whatever. But the fact that they fired him, was I think an indication that Girard wanted to show strength and say, hey, look, I'm on top of this. I got it. And so, whatever, whether you like that or not, it's a play, it's a move. And I think that was in play here too. So I think he's done all the right things the last couple of weeks to keep himself in a good spot. And, they're going to have a committee that helps him hire this AD, and then probably a committee that helps hire the football coach. And bottom line, though, you're right. I mean, they got to get this one right, and they got to get both of them right. The football coach is obviously important. Everybody knows that. That's been, I don't know how many years we've said, oh, they can't get the next one wrong, and then they did, and then somehow survived it. So that's got to be up soon. So this one, each time it fails, the next one becomes even more important. And I think they'll improve the football coach almost automatically. I mean, Les did some good things, but they're standing at an upgrade right there immediately in terms of X's and O's and day-to-day stuff. So I don't think that'll be a problem, but they got to get the AD right because of what you just said. I mean, the NCAA investigation, FBI stuff still lingering. Whoever it is, male or female, is going to have to hire a football coach, and that will be the biggest hire in the athletic department's potentially history, especially if things move crazy down the road with realignment again and stuff like that. And then, you're talking about the granting of rights thing expiring not too far down the road, and somebody that's going to have to lead them through that. I mean, there's a lot of big jobs that are going to be tied to that position here very soon. And so, as interesting as it is to think of a guy like Danny Manning doing it, I think that's why you can't have a guy like Danny Manning doing it, because you just need somebody that's got some experience going through that. Could they hire Danny and have him be a name and he puts three or four really good people under him? Yes, that could work, but it's probably not ideal. I think there are a lot of sitting ADs that are interested in the job, and there were last time as well. And I think that you have to do your due diligence there and really give those guys and gals a look and really make sure that you're hiring the guy that you need, the person that you need, because it is not something you can mess up on a second time. That doesn't mean it has to be a 20-year guy. It could be 5 years. Just get us through that next phase. And if that's the case, that's the case. Ideally, it would be a 20-year guy, because that seems to work really well everywhere else. When those when those guys can hunker down and stay in that spot and just get something to the level they want it and then just put it on cruise control. But KU's so far from cruise control right now that you know they need to make some good hires here. And I think they will. I really do. I'm telling you that as soon as that couple of days kind of ended and Les was out, Jeff was out, you know, I didn't step foot on campus, but just around town, it felt different. The air felt lighter. It just felt like, you know, good things are coming. And you know, I'm a KU grad, but that never factors into what I do. I don't care anymore. You know, I have a job to do. And so I'm not saying that with anything other than just telling you how it feels. And I feels like things are better days are ahead for this program. And without saying, because, you know, it's been a pretty rough couple of weeks for sure. So it'll be really interesting though. And you know, I think they're going to have two really good lists for both of those jobs.
Matt, thank you so much for your time. I know how busy you are this week, and it means a lot to me that you would make time for us on a busy week like this to talk a little Kansas basketball and share your guitar stories. We'll catch up somewhere when it's a little slower down the summer. Maybe you could tell me some beach stories. So I'll look forward to those as well.
There you go.
Yeah, great stories, man. Awesome. Thank you so much.
That'd be great. I appreciate it. Yeah, well, thank you. And that's what I was going to say. You always find a way to get me talking about something else. So when you asked me to come on, I was excited because I knew it would give me a little break from the March Madness and the AD and the coaching search. And I didn't know I'd be talking about my base debut, but I'm glad it came up and I'm glad you got a kick out of it. So I appreciate it. But good to talk with you. And yeah, you know how to find me. So anytime.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much for your time. Take care. All right, there's Matt Tate, who's joining us here on Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. He's the sports editor of the Lawrence Journal World, and I'm just a huge fan of him. And that interview was brought to you by, I'll just mention our sponsors here real quickly as we get ready to wrap this up. I have some other thoughts here in just a moment. The ones we didn't get in a little bit earlier, Fry Orthodontics, Roberts Robinson, of course, Elite Automation, and Back Nine Development. Couldn't do the podcast every day without our great sponsors. And what we were touching on there at the end about the KU Athletics Department, we'll see how it unfolds, but I think it's a little bit amazing. Well, no, I think there's probably some heat on Chancellor Girard. I do. This has not gone well under his watch. Football has not gone well. Athletics has not gone well. I'm trying to think of the thing that has improved since he's been there. That hasn't happened. Now, the argument is that's not the chancellor's job. The chancellor's in charge of university, which is about academics and all these other things. And I'm good with that. But there is a long list of chancellors around America that got in trouble at their school because athletics underneath their leadership as the president of the chancellor was a disaster. And right now, this is America's college disaster. You have a $30 million budget deficit this year. You have an NCAA investigation that's going to be winding up in the next few months that will likely put Kansas on probation to miss at least a couple NCAA tournaments, maybe more. There could be a show cause against the basketball coach. There could be a change with Bill Self going to a new basketball coach. There is no athletic director right now. That was a poor hire. The football coach wound up being a disaster. The athletic director threw him under the bus and then got fired himself. There isn't a lot of great things going on right now in athletics at Kansas. And look, this is the way it's been for quite a while. Everybody else just kind of implodes except Bill Self. He just keeps winning, and he just kept winning this year. And I know we always argue about his best coaching jobs. This one's up there. This team wasn't very good in January, and now they're a 3 seed going into the NCAA tournament. They're dealing with COVID. You don't even judge this team against a lot of other Kansas teams. You just judge it for what it did this year. And if you look at where, for example, 5 weeks ago, Lon Kruger was with Oklahoma and Bill Self was with Kansas, and where they are now, one's a 3 seed, the other's an 8. I mean, it's amazing. He did a tremendous job with this team. He got them to buy in to play defense. And they're doing that, and that makes them a threat in this tournament. Even against USC without Jalen Wilson, if that's what happens next week, if that's what happens, it happens. They can play good enough defense to advance. Bill Self's a good enough coach to do that, and he's tremendous in the last couple minutes. He squeezes a game out like an NBA coach. Most college coaches don't. He's tremendous at the end. They have that going for him at Kansas. Other than that, they have nothing going for them in athletics. Nothing. They're broke. They're in debt. Their football facilities are subpar. They have had to shelve, you know, what was years ago. They said, oh, we're going to raise $300 million and put it into the stadium. They haven't done that. They don't have an athletic director. They don't have a football coach. I don't know how the chancellor isn't on the hot seat with the Board of Regents. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. I'm not on the inside, nor would I know. I just know that Kansas athletics is a mess, except for 40 minutes when Bill Self is coaching basketball. And when he's coaching, they have a chance to beat anybody because he's that good of a coach. And I think for too long, they've simply relied on, well, Bill Self's got all this. He's so good. We just keep him happy and everything's good here because he's the golden goose. You know, he's the cash cow. Everybody understood that, but they all run amok and they were all just grabbing paychecks. And it was gross. To be honest, it was gross. An athletic director who signed a contract, who got Girard, this is the biggest mix as far as I'm concerned. Any chancellor that signs off on a deal for a new athletic director that is unemployed, that gets a clause in his contract that says he gets bonus money if the basketball team goes on probation, that should have been a red flag. That right there, the second Jeff Long asked for that, he should have been eliminated as a candidate. And I said it when I was on the radio the day he was hired. I was like, oh my God, look at this clause in this contract. He benefits millions of dollars if KU gets in trouble. Who would agree to that? That's absolute insanity. That's on Girard. And so I do think he's on some thin ice, and I do think he's made an awful lot of mistakes. And, I mean, if you're a Kansas fan of anything in the athletics department, just thank your blessings every day that Bill Self's been your basketball coach. And hope that the NCAA doesn't determine that he's one of the all-time great cheaters and really hammer the school and the coach. Because right now, you just got to have your fingers crossed on that. Because it looks like something really severe is coming. We just don't know exactly what that is. I know what Matt Tate is. He is salt of the earth. He's a good dude. He's a great sports writer. And who knew he was an impromptu jam band guitarist with his dad? That is great stuff. Matt Tate, the sports editor of the Lawrence Journal World. The website is kusports.com. I want you to go there. And if you follow Kansas Athletics, make sure you go to kusports.com. He has all the breaking news. The second we knew Jalen Wilson wasn't making the trip with Kansas, that was because Matt Tate was putting it out there. It was at the site kusports.com. And I'm pleased to have him right here on KKHI.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. For additional VIP-only podcasts, live streaming of breaking news, sports wagering tips from the experts, and in-person special events, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron for as little as $5 per month.
This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media, Incorporated.